Welcome to SCD Church's podcast. You can always join us for our live services Saturday evenings and Sunday mornings out in our West Auditorium. You can also tune into our services live online at seacoastchrist.org or on our YouTube and Facebook pages. Thanks so much for listening.
A couple things real fast is one, the guys, we have a men's retreat that is coming up in 2 weeks, and we're going to Catalina for a couple days, and if you've never been, you need to go, because what happens is within just a couple days, you have about a year's worth of relationships that you get to build, the people that you're going to get to know around here, and also spiritual development. And so really want to push, if you're thinking about going, that you should go, and there's not that many spots left, and so please get signed up today. It's a lot of fun. I'll be there. Pastor Matt will be there, and a bunch of the leaders, so make sure you're there for that. And then also, if you're new here and this is kind of becoming a part of your life and your church, one of the ways that we worship is by giving God not only our voices, but also our resources, and so you can do that online as well. All right, so we started a new series last weekend, and it's called You're So Close, and we're looking at ways that God comes near to us and some of the barriers that keep us from Him. And so to get us thinking about today's topic, I want just to do a quick thought experiment. Let's imagine that as you're walking in today, you came through the lobby, and sometimes I'm out there and I'm greeting and saying hi to folks, and I see you walk in, and I point at you and I say, hey, you, come here real quick. Yeah, I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting all weekend to see you, and I need to talk to you after service. Very important, so make sure you don't leave without me talking to you. What is the first question that's going to come to your mind? Why? What did I do? What's happening? Did someone call? Did they rat on me? How does he know? I had a situation like that a couple weeks ago where my kids are playing sports right now. And so one of the coaches comes up to me as the game is about to start. And he says, hey, make sure you don't leave because I need to talk to you at the end of the game. I went, oh no, what did he do? Again, what did I do? Maybe he's going to talk to me about my attitude. I don't really know. And so for the next 2.5 hours, I can't even watch the game because I'm just going, what does he want? Why does he need to talk to me? And this is something that is very unique to humanity, and it's a gift that we have, is we ask the question, why? You're not going to go home after this and find your dog staring at the ceiling, having an existential crisis, wondering, why do I exist? He's going to say, oh good, you're home. You can take me for a walk and feed me lunch. But he's never going to ask, what's the purpose of all of this? In Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, he argues that we should begin any decision that we have to make with asking why. Now, it's a business book and a leadership book, but I think it's a really good principle, is because when we ask why, it reveals to us what the purpose is of something, the reason why we exist. It fuels us, it guides us, it defines what success looks like. The problem is that most of us, we are too busy or too distracted to ask why. And so we live our lives with the what and the how, but without the why. So the what is, well, here's the vision, the future that I want to create for myself. Here's what I want my life to look like. And so some of us, we have a picture of what that's going to look like. And then we get up every day and we live out the how of how that's going to happen. How do we get to the what? But we very rarely stop and ask why. I remember when Amy and I first got married, we were working very long days, 12, 16-hour days, and we did this for years and years and years, until eventually we just hit this stopping point because there's so much stress on our marriage. We said, why are we doing this? And, you know, my first answer was, well, because we want to have this kind of life. We want to live in this neighborhood. We want to raise kids here. We want to drive these cars and go on these vacations. And then I had to ask a follow-up question, well, why do you want those things? And I had to be really honest with myself. It was really about making myself look good. Because for most of my life, I had been known as a slacker, true, and I wanted to change that. I wanted to be somebody. I wanted to be significant. I wanted people to see me as important, not the kid who just is barely making it by. And so at the end of the day, my why was me. I wanted to appear a certain way to people. And then I had asked, well, okay, is that something that you want to live for? Like, do you want to live your entire life just trying to be somebody? That's this image that you want to portray to people? No, that's not what I want to live for. I don't want to get to the end of my life, and that's what I have to show. And so we had to reconsider, or at least I had to reconsider my why. And when I reconsidered my why, it changed my what and my how, which is one of the ways that I ended up in ministry. And so if we are being honest, and we can acknowledge that we never dig down deep and ask why, we are in danger of one day also waking up and going, I've spent a whole lot of my life on something that doesn't matter. So that's the question I want to ask today, is what is your why? What's your purpose? What gets you out of bed every day? Because everybody has a why. Now, you may not be able to verbalize it. You may not even be conscious of what your why is, but everybody has a why. You can't live without one. And so all of us are living towards some end. I like to think of it like this. There's two ways that you can kind of figure out your purpose. One is that you decide it. And I think that's pretty much how most people in our highly individualistic culture, they think of their life is, well, when I think about what I'm living for, I'm going to decide what it will look like. And so here's the image that comes to my mind is we think of life as this blank canvas and we can do whatever we want. We can design and paint this picture and then this is what our life is going to be about. And there's endless things you can make your life about. We can make it about money or success or image or most people at the end of the day make their life about personal satisfaction. They call it happiness. I think the point of my life is at the end, it's a big smiley face. I'm gonna be happy. And so we start to organize our lives around this goal. We look for a spouse that we believe will make us happy. And if they don't make us happy, we're gonna find a new spouse. Or if we have a job, we think it's gonna make us happy or at least give us things that'll make us happy. And if it doesn't, then we're gonna find another job. Or if we go to church, we think the point of church is to make us happy. And so if we're not happy there, we're going to switch and we're going to find a new one. Problem is that oftentimes happiness and purpose or your why are in conflict. So think about this. If you're a parent, grandparent, one of the biggest and most meaningful things that you have in your life is raising children. And yet they are the people who can make you the most unhappy as well. I mean, my kids on a regular basis, I'm just like, you're ruining my happiness. You're making me quite unhappy right now. And yet it's incredibly fulfilling. There's a lot of purpose in it. It's probably one of the most fulfilling things that you can do. And so there is this conflict between happiness and purpose. And I don't think it's just raising that as just one example, but I think almost anything that you're gonna find purpose in will not necessarily make you happy, at least not in that moment. And so I don't think the purpose of our life is happiness. And we intuitively know this to be true because if you look at the people that you most admire, the people that we write books about and there's documentaries based on, the people who have lived these significant lives, you know what they never made their life about? Happiness and comfort. They made it about something deeper, something more profound. Oftentimes it was something externally focused to themselves. And so here's the other option. Maybe it's not that we decide. Maybe our purpose is discovered. And so if the image of decide is this blank canvas, the image of discover is sort of like a connect the dots paper. You know, they connect the dots. It's called the numbers, and your job is to try to figure out how this dot, and then connect them and make sure. And at the end of it, you'll end up painting this really cool picture. Oftentimes, it's better than a picture, at least for me, that I could paint for myself. And I think being a Christian, life is much more like that. As you can scribble all over that paper if you want to, but if you want to create something significant, you're going to have to begin to connect the dots. You're going to have to look at your life not as just a bunch of randomness or a bunch of coincidences or something that you can make up, but there is a purpose and a plan behind all of it. And your job is not to go and create whatever you want. Your job is to figure out what has my creator decided that I should do, and then I want to make sure that make my life about that. So here's kind of the bottom line, at least for me, how that I make sense of this, is, keep going one more. When you decide your purpose, which is what most people do, you are led by your desires. So as I watch people decide what they're going to do with their life, it's almost always led by some desire. It could be an insecurity, it could be pride, it could be the desire for pleasure or some kind of acknowledgement. But at the end of the day, they all make their lives about some sort of internal desire that they have. But when you think that you need to discover your purpose, you're led by your designer. Okay, I think that there's something bigger, something grander, a plan that I have, and it's not one that I'm going to figure out or one that I'm going to make up. It's something that I'm going to discover as I pursue the designer. So if you look at the things that you spend your time and your money on, which is really you're spending your life on, and you keep asking why, eventually you will hit rock bottom and you will figure out, this is my why. This is what I live for. So last night after I did the talk, a friend and I were discussing the season of life that we're in, and where we're at is there's a lot of sports, okay? So my kids are involved in a lot of sports, and I know there's a lot of you in that season as well. And he said this, and it was funny because I was thinking the same thing. He said, you know, I was driving home, and we're constantly running around, and I asked that question, why are we doing this? Why are we involved in so many things? Why do we spend so much time? And I think it's a really valid question. So I started to think about it myself. Okay, why do we do this? And I think there are some good reasons. So some of the things that I came up with was, well, I want them to learn how to work hard and how to get along with other people and be a part of a team, how to win and lose well. And also I want them to have fun. And then I had to ask myself, okay, well, why are those things important? Well, I think those are disciplines that they can learn through, that'll be helpful throughout life, and it'll be helpful in their faith as they pursue their purpose and they pursue God. They're going to have to know how to do these things. And so I think there's some really valid reasons why we push them to do these things. But I also know that there's other answers to that question. And I may be guilty of this other times where I'm tempted to believe the reason why I put 9-year-old out on the baseball field is because I want him to win. And you're guilty of it too. I've seen you parents out there. It is as if your life depends on this win right here. And there's an intensity and there's a... And I just want to stop, and I have to stop and ask myself, why do I care right now? What is this about? Now, if you think the purpose of life is I'm going to win, I'm going to beat other people, I'm going to be the best, and it starts here and now, okay. If that's your why, I can understand why you care. But is that really what you want to live for? Is that what you want at the end of your life, your why, to have been about? And so asking the question why really reveals your purpose, or at least what your have made your life about. There's a story in the Old Testament. I want to look at it just real briefly today. One of my favorite stories, because it's a story of a guy named Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, he gets to discover what God's purpose is for his life, but it's not through these like miraculous means. So sometimes when we look at the Bible, it's a burning bush. God speaks audibly to someone and it's like, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to do with my life. But that's not what happens with Nehemiah. He starts to discover what it is that God is calling him to do through often, you know, pretty ordinary and regular events and circumstances, just like you and I may discover ours. And along the way, as he's beginning to learn things about what God is calling him to do, I think there's some learnings for us as we figure out what God is calling us to do. So Nehemiah 1, verse 1 says this. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men. And I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. So if you're not a Bible person or you don't really know much about this story, you're going to be like, I have no idea what any of that means. Let me give you a little context. This is about 450 years before Jesus. And we have the nation of Israel. And if you don't know, the nation of Israel is this. It started with one man and it becomes eventually a nation, and it has a special relationship with God. He says, look, I'm going to communicate and reveal certain things about myself, and you're going to end up blessing the whole world, but you have to be faithful to me. You got to follow my commands. We're going to have this relationship. And along the way, the people of Israel would decide, well, we don't really want to go by those rules. We kind of want to do our own thing. And so God would send prophets, and prophets would say, hey, shape up or God's going to discipline you. And eventually it got so bad that God would discipline them. And the way that he did it is he'd send foreign armies in to attack, to burn down their cities, and oftentimes take chunks of people to these foreign lands as exiles. Well, that's what happened to Israel, is they were taken out, and a big chunk of them, about 140 years prior to Nehemiah, and they were living in a foreign land. And so Nehemiah asks, well, what's the condition of the city? What's happening there? Because he understood that there was something larger than just the destruction of a city. And so we kind of get our first learning right here. Here's our first learning. Whatever it is that God wants you to do with your life, your picture is going to be a piece of his picture. So about 10 years ago, we did this exercise as a staff. We had a consulting firm come in, and you know these team building exercises, they're a little bit cheesy. So they say, here's what we're gonna do, is we blew up this giant picture, and it's a 3x5 huge thing, and we cut it into about 6 pieces, and then divide you into groups. You're gonna take your piece of the picture, and you're gonna draw it on a canvas. So, okay, so here we go, we do it. It was funny, the picture that they gave me, they did a really bad job of making a copy of it because there was the arrow from the mouse that was in it. I thought, I will leave that in there, that's silly. And so I get that, we go through and, you know, we paint the whole thing and we come back together, and then they display it on the wall and they say, hey, look, you're a piece of this team. And so even though your little piece may not make that much sense or doesn't feel significant in the moment, when it comes together, it makes this beautiful mosaic. All right. I think that it doesn't just, the illustration or the example that they're trying to give doesn't just work when it comes to team building. I really think that that's how life works. At least that's how life works as you follow Jesus. Is when you believe that your life is all about just your piece of the puzzle, just a little picture that you have, it's not going to be very significant, and it may not make a whole lot of sense. Because if you were looking at that piece that I was given, it was a background of a piece of some sort of candy, which is what the image was, and then a mouse that was laid over the top of that, and you're looking at it, this makes absolutely no sense. And I think that's why some of our lives don't make sense, as we go, I don't understand what God is trying to do. Well, because you got to connect it to the bigger picture. He has a big picture. He is writing this picture throughout human history, and you're going to have a little piece of it, and yours is only going to make sense, and it's only going to be something that's significant when it is connected to what he's doing. And so what Nehemiah understands is if he's going to do something significant with his life, he is going to have to make sure that it is a part of what God is doing, that he is playing a part in the grander story that God's writing. So the natural question arises is, well, what is God doing in the world? Well, Jesus told us. He said, I'm going to do this thing, and it's going to transform the world. It's actually going to bring people who are far away from me to myself. It's called the church. And so I'm going to build my church, and I want you to be a part of it. And so whatever the piece of the puzzle looks like for yours, it's probably going to be something to do with he's going to build the church. Verse 3. They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. So he gets a report, still a mess. And this is not a surprise. It's been a mess for 140, 150 years. But he was hoping that there was some progress because another man named Ezra, who is also a Jewish exile, went back and he began to teach the people about God. And he was hoping that not only would it revive them spiritually, but they would also begin to revive the city. Well, the report comes back, sorry, nothing is taking place here. And so the city is still in ruins, and it's a mess. Now, here's where Nehemiah is different than you and I. Is Nehemiah's response is not, well, that's a bummer, I feel bad. You know, I'll pray for you guys. But that kind of sounds like a you problem. Like, isn't that what we do when we hear about bad news? That doesn't affect us personally. We go, ooh, that's a bummer. Glad it's not me, though, you know? No, too close to home for you? All right. But that's not his response. And we'll see his response, but I think there's a learning here. The learning is the picture you are creating is not about you. The picture you're creating is not about you. So my wife loves taking pictures, especially family pictures. And so before every holiday and vacation, we negotiate how many pictures I have to be a part of. How many do I have to stand? Because I am just not about it. And so, okay, we're going to do these. Here's the days. We're going to take family pictures, all this kind of stuff. And she takes the pictures, and then she'll show me the picture. And you know how I determine if it's a good picture or not? How I look in it, right? That's the exact. You do it too. Every picture that you are in, where's the first place that you look? You, right? Kids could be looking in a different direction. She could be blinking. It doesn't matter. If I don't look chubby, that's the picture. That's going to be the one. It's going to hang up above the fireplace. And this is how a lot of us look at life. As we look at it and we go, okay, this, what makes a good life is, how do I look in it? What do I look like? What is the image? I mean, that's really what social media is, right? Social media is, hey guys, here's the life that I've created. I have the spouse, I have the kids, I live in this house, I drive this car, we go on these vacations. Ooh, look at me. Because that's what we believe this point of life is. It's about making ourselves look good. But when you become a Christ follower, what you are saying is you're saying it's no longer about the picture that I want to paint, it's the picture that you want me to paint. And so it's yours. And guess what? You will not be the center of the picture. He will. And the picture that you want to paint that you think is a successful life will look nothing like the picture he wants to paint for you. Because think about the life that Jesus created for himself. Did he live this picture perfect life? No, he was sinless for sure, but at the end of it, I believe he was on a cross. And so the life that he will have for you and I will probably look something like that. It will be focused on sacrificial love, about loving God and loving other people. And it will cost us. It cost him and it will cost each one of us, but it will be a much better picture than the one we could create for ourselves. Verse 4, for some days, I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. When we're trying to determine what it is God has for us, this is the part we don't like. Because the truth is that the picture that God has planned for us might be painful. Or it may come out of a place of pain that we've experienced. And that's oftentimes how God shakes us. He wakes us up. He gets us out of our apathy and he says, okay, I have something for you, but you're not going to pay attention until I make this hurt a little bit. Because this is what's going to wake you up to the realities of life and eternity. And so there may be some pain that you're going to have to experience. But here's what's different about being a Christian, because everybody's going to experience pain. As Christians, we have the opportunity to allow God to use it to bring purpose. I don't believe that God causes our pain, but I do think that he will use it. And so whenever I encounter someone, and this is almost on a weekly basis, who's going through a difficult situation, the first thing that I do is I connect them with someone who has also been through that situation and made it. And what happens is they can obviously give them insight and guidance and relate in a way that I cannot. And so it's good for the person experiencing, but it's also really good for the other person who's been through it. You know why? Because if you've ever walked through a difficult time with someone and you've helped them make it out, there's an incredible amount of purpose that you experience. You may even look back and go, you know, I wouldn't have chosen for that to happen, but I get why. I would never want to do it again, but I understand why God would allow this to happen. Because God is in the business of redeeming things, including our pain. And so there can be, and oftentimes is, purpose in our pain if we will allow it. Now, at the end of Nehemiah's prayer, here's what he says, verse 11. Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayers of this, your servant, and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. So he's going to go and he's going to speak to the king. And he knows that God is calling him to something that is quite scary. And so what is the first thing that Nehemiah does? He begins to pray. Because here's what Nehemiah knows, is if you're going to be a part of what God's doing in the world, he's going to call you to do something that is so outside of your comfort zone and probably whatever influence and power and resources that you have. And so you're going to have to lean on him. Every time I come out here to speak, I spend the week, but also the moments before I come out and I go, God, whatever you want to say, I just want you to communicate it through me, because if it's up to me to change people's hearts and minds, we're in trouble. And so you have to show up and do something significant, because I know I can't. That's what Nehemiah is praying. And notice what he asks. He asks for the opportunity. He doesn't pray like oftentimes we do. We go, God, will you change this situation? Will you do something miraculous? Will you raise somebody up who will make a difference? He goes, no. Lord, I'm willing. If you'll open up the doors, if you'll give me the opportunity, I am willing to step through those doors so that there can be change. So would you give me the opportunity and the favor to be a part of what you're going to do? And so here's the learning on this one, is you can't create this picture on your own. It's going to be too big, it's going to be overwhelming, and you're going to need God to guide you every step of the way. So my struggle throughout the years has been wrestling with going to Disneyland or not. If you've been around, you've heard about it before. And we've come to a solution in our family that I don't have to go because I was making it miserable for everybody, which was my point. And so I don't go to Disneyland anymore, but my family still does. And so my wife and my daughter went and they came back and they had these characters. They drew Goofy. And if you've ever been to California Adventure, you know that there's this animation studio that you can go into and there will be an animator at the front of the room that will show you how to draw one of the characters. And I've done it before. And it's pretty crazy because as a person who struggles doing stick figures, I actually could draw at the end of it something that resembled one of the characters. How are they able to take someone like myself who can't draw at all and actually create something that looks halfway decent? Well, one, they understood the picture. In their mind, they got the picture. Even if you don't know what the picture is going to be, in their mind, they know what it is. And they know what it's going to take in order to get from here to there, each of the steps. And so when they're talking you through, they're saying, okay, I want you to draw this. Even if it doesn't make sense, you go, okay, I'm trusting that you've got it because I have no idea what I'm doing right now. See, this is what it means to follow God, is God goes, okay, I have this picture in mind, and I know all the steps it's going to take in order for you to get there, but I'm not going to give it to you up front. Because if I gave you the whole picture up front, one, it would be overwhelming. The other is you would probably take off and go, I got it. And then you would run and try to make this picture yourself. And that's not the point. The point is, I want a relationship with you. And so we're going to develop this picture together. Each step of the way, I'm going to give you the next step, and it may or may not make sense. And then you're going to come back to me and you're going to go, okay, so what's next? What comes after this? Because as we are developing this picture, we're also developing a relationship. And that's the point. He finishes his prayer with a seemingly random fact in verse 11. He says, I was cupbearer to the king. Now, to you and I, this doesn't mean anything. Cupbearer to the king, that's not even a job. What is that? You're an alcoholic is what it sounds like. What is it? You just drink wine all day for the king? Well, yeah, kind of. He was a person who would drink the wine before the king to make sure that it wasn't poisoned. And this job was held only by someone who was trusted by the king. I mean, he's literally trusting him with his life. And so Nehemiah has all of the influence and all of the resources. He is the number two guy to the king, the most important and powerful man in the world. And so we see that Nehemiah has the resources and he has the opportunity to do something significant. So here's kind of the next point, is we have to look for pointers towards our picture. When I was trying to discover what it is that God wanted me to do with my life, I started to look around, and there's some verses, Acts 17 talks about this, that you're not here by accident. It's not all just a coincidence, that God has placed you in a specific time and place with resources and relationships and opportunities, and those are pointers to what he wants you to do. And so I started to reevaluate my life and start to look at, okay, well, what could God be pointing me to do? And so I started to look at my family. My great-grandfather and great-grandmother were both pastors, and then all of their kids were pastors, and then all of their kids were pastors, and all the cousins and uncles, and then I was, you know, my dad started church, and I was a pastor or entering into the ministry, and I enjoyed it, and I found purpose in it, and I had some gifts. And so at the end of the day, I looked at all these things, and I thought, I should go into business. No, I said, I should be a pastor, I think. That seems to be where God is pointing. And so I prayed a bunch about it, and I said, okay, God, is this where you point to me? And sometimes I wonder if God just looks at us and as we're asking, God, what do you want me to do? And he's going, how can I make this more clear? I'm pretty sure I've shown you a lot of pointers that are all pointing in the same direction, and you keep asking me, God, what do you want me to do? I don't think I can help you. And so we need to start to look around at some of the opportunities and passions and gifts and influence that we have and say, you know, I don't think that they're in my life for me. I think maybe God's trying to point me to do something with them. Chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes season. So if you remember, this is kind of how the story started, but it's in a different month. It's about 4 months after this initial vision that Nehemiah has. And if you've ever experienced this before, especially if you're getting amped up, you're like, okay, God's calling me to do something. And you're like, all right, and you go full force. And then you get to this point, you're like, hurry up and wait. Oh, nothing's taking place. God, did you forget about me? And it's a dangerous place to be when you're waiting, because you can either continue to push forward and leave God behind, or you can forget about it altogether. And everyone hates waiting, especially us. We love instant everything. I remember when my kids started to watch live television. So they were on streaming, Netflix, Disney, all their... And then my son started to watch professional sports, and he'd watch them live. And the first time he encountered a commercial, he almost lost his mind. He's like, Dad, fast forward it. What is going on? Hurry it up. I'm like, buddy, you can't fast forward it. And he just didn't understand. He's like, we're wasting the next 3 minutes just sitting here? This is crazy. But here's kind of the learning here, is pictures take preparation. And so waiting time is not necessarily wasted time. Even though it feels like nothing is happening, God might be working in you, in some people that are around you, arranging some circumstances. I remember when I first entered into ministry, I had transitioned out of a fairly comfortable business, And I decided, okay, I'm going to go full force and I'm going to become a pastor. And so I was a junior high pastor. And I remember entering into the first junior high service. There was 25 kids and I had been studying all week and I was going to meet these kids and I was going to just give them this, you know, super passionate message. And so I get up there in front of these 25 kids and the kid in the front row takes his popcorn and starts pouring it all over his head. Every kid in the thing just thought, that's hilarious. I don't know what this guy's wanting to talk about, but that guy's funny. And so we got nothing done. I remember walking out of the room going, so this was the big plan, huh, God? Is this it? And what I came to realize, and it's still true today, is that before God was going to work through me, he had to work in me. He had some stuff that he needed to change about Cody and still continues to do so. And there were some things that I had to learn, some things I had to learn about him and about myself and about this job. And so I was in the right place. Now, it felt like I was wasting my time. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? But it wasn't wasted time. And it was in that season that I learned a really important lesson, one that I still lean on all the time, is biblical success is determined by faithfulness, not fruitfulness. See, the world says you're successful when you see the fruits of your effort. Show me your bank account. Show me what you've accomplished. Now you're successful. But the Bible doesn't say that. It says you are successful when you say yes to God and you're faithful. You know, you eventually will see the fruit of that success.